Hey, Podnutians. Welcome to Mini PT Show number 89. My name is Door-to-Door Geek. This show is brought to you by Jordan Brown, Patreon from November 2017. Thank you very much, Jordan. Sooner or later, we'll start charging you. Joined this week by Rich. How's everything going, man?
Hey, buddy. All good. I am at the Hughes Compound Southern Command, so I'm excited to be here.
Very cool. Very cool. We are going to start this with a announcement. Eric Ardini, founding member of this podcast, passed away five days ago from liver cancer. We have a GoFundMe, which is being held right now. If you go to podnuts.com/support Eric, you'll be redirected to the GoFundMe. That page will change this weekend. I plan on doing a 24-hour marathon starting on Saturday, April 13th at around noon, hopefully going all the way to April 14th, Sunday at around noon. It's going to be basically anything goes, of course, in normal Podnutsian type things, though family-friendly content only. No religion, no politics, but anything that Eric would have liked to talk about, which means basically anything, even games. He proclaimed himself not a gamer, but plenty of time to either do mini PC projects, ask me anything type things. If you want to hop on at any time, all you gotta do is shoot me an email, either ddg@podnuts.com, mail@podnuts.com, door2doorgeek@gmail.com, or minipc@podnuts.com. Rich, you said you're going to try to stop out at least once.
I'm gonna stop in as often as I can.
Very cool. I expect, and now here's the real truth, I don't have a lot of time to do a lot of mini PC projects, so that might be a really good time to catch up on some.
Oh, cool.
So do you have any mini PC news or updates in your universe since the last time we re-recorded?
So I mostly money spending. I don't think I did anything new. So I ordered an Odroid N2. So I'm kind of excited about that. ETA Prime, I saw a video. I don't think it came out today, but ETA Prime did a video on it. So it looks good. He was running the Android 9. In fact, my Note 8 came out with Android 9 last night. So just playing with that a little bit. I ordered, and I'm going to butcher it. It's not, I always want to say ESP286. It's not ESP286. I think it's 2668. But these devices have cameras on them. And apparently on board, you can do facial recognition. And if you order them from AliExpress, they're like $9 a piece. So I ordered two, and I got an email today that said they were being shipped. So no tracking on it, but it said they're being shipped from the manufacturer. So we'll see what happens, because I'd love to put... I worked from home today, and I do have cameras around the house. And I was kind of shocked. I walked out. You know, I had the garage door open. I walked out, and there was an Amazon box. So the mail person, you know, dropped off a box right at my garage. Thank you. She's really great about that. And I didn't even know they were here. In my office, I have a window that faces the front of the house. I should see people coming and going. So one of the things I want to do is be able to say, motion detection is so useless, it's unbelievable. But if I can say, hey, there's motion and that motion's a person, all of a sudden that's useful, because it could be, hey, I got a delivery, you know, that kind of thing. Or, you know, family's coming home, and if I can recognize it to be a family member, I can do other actions. So hey, well, that's what I'm excited about.
Well, really quick, it does say expected delivery of the Odroid N2 should be around April 11th, so it could be in as early as tomorrow is my logic. But really quick, the Odroid N2 is basically the newest Odroid board coming out. You can get it with either 2 gig or 4 gigs of RAM. The gimmick is it has a 6-core processor, 4 little, 2 big, it looks like. No, 4 big, 2 little.
Correct.
The big ones are A73s at 1.8 gigahertz. The two that are little are A53 at 1.9 gigahertz. 2 gig of RAM, eMMC, micro SD card, 8 gig.
You get 4 gigs of RAM.
Well, 2 or 4, yeah.
Yep.
Gigabit NIC, HDMI, composite video, SPDIF, 4 USB 3.0, micro USB 2.0 OTG, no power at all on that port, which is good because it wouldn't be able to power the USB 3 ports. And it has some pins and other things on it. I will say the only thing that makes me just a slight bit hesitant about this board is I noticed on the board there's a physical fan connector, yet I don't see any pictures with any fans on it, nor do I see anybody selling a fan for it. So my thing is the designers thought a fan would be prudent, but I don't see any of them yet. And the Google Hangout links is in the Mumble chat for you, Rich. The thing I like about this board, honestly, is I really like the design. Yes, I like the RAM. Yes, I like the processor. Yes, I like the I/O. Yes, I like the ports. I like everything. But I really do like the design of the board because the entire bottom of the board basically sits on like a little table. But that table is actually, it looks like an entire heat sink. What I like is for like an extra $6 on Maradroid, you can get a quote unquote case. And it's really not a case. All it is a cover that goes on top of it, but it really does make it look like a full functional computer. I really do like the design of this a lot. And to me, it's fairly priced. It ain't cheap, but it's fairly priced for $64.95 for the 2 gig model. It was $81 for the 4 gig model. I think that's, to be honest, fair.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think it's a great thing. And well, of course, I ordered one, so I'm just going to say it is a great thing. The fan, I'm not sure what the idea of that is, because it's using that same or very similarly designed as like the HC1 and HC2, where it's on a hunk of aluminum, like extruded aluminum. So, what's his name? ETA Prime said it didn't even get warm. Now, the AM Logic chip that they're using, the S922X, that's a new chip, so support for it may be a little weak at this time, but it should get better over time. So the competitor is the ROC chip, the 3399, so that's going to be really what it's going to be going up against.
Well, and I would have thought 8 months ago, well, the ROC chip 3399 will have more support, blah, 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 but I'm not really thinking that now. I will say this one will probably have a very good chance to have very good support. The only reason I think fan is because heat goes up, and while the processor is, it looks like facing down on the board, and the heatsink is on the bottom of the board. It's just one of those little things that would have made me at least, I don't want to say feel better, but it would have made me think that they would have maybe planned it just a skosh better. But what I don't like is everybody I saw with preview boards were only running Android on it or emulation station with retro games on it. While I think that's a fine use case, I really do. I also think it's the best way to show off the power of one of these mini computers is to run full-fledged Linux servers on it. Yes, running 4K video is difficult. You know, yes, it is. And to be honest, that's all some people care about. But I like to have the option at least to run both well. And once I see full-fledged Linux running on this thing smoothly, then I will be quite desired to, pop the trigger.
Yeah, I kind of jumped on this early. I don't know if I said this last week. I may have said it incorrectly. The Odroid XU4 is a 64-bit setup. It's not 32-bit. And I don't know if I said it was 32-bit last week, but just based on Odroid having winners, I'm like, I'm buying.
Yeah, and to be honest, that's the thing that makes me feel the best about this board is because it's an Odroid. Odroid isn't like everything they do is perfect, but I will say, I don't think they've actually put out anything that wasn't of like top shelf quality. The last one I will say that I remember them putting out that wasn't really good quality was the Odroid C1, and that was maybe 5 years ago, and it was good. It just, I don't think, was as good as it could have been.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we do have some emails here, Rich. I tried to forward them to you. The one that I think was the most prevalent one, I can copy and paste in the Mumble chat for you here.
Uh-oh. Yeah, I'm doing Mumble on my Chromebook.
I can put it in the Hangout. I can put it in the Mumble. I can put it in the YouTube comments. I can put it wherever you want.
Let's see. Where does it come onto a PC here? Let me start up Mumble on my computer.
I also sent it to you an email a couple minutes ago.
Oh, okay. If it's on the email, I got it here then.
Yeah, this email is entitled Mini Space PC Space Show Space Question.
Okay.
From Gregory.
So from Gregory Smith. Dor, I'm a longtime listener and longtime Plex user. Cool. That's me saying that. It's an awesome product, as you know. Right now, I have a Lenovo Think server in the basement. That's my Plex server. I've moved all my content to a NAS, and I'm looking at what smaller energy footprint I can use for it. I seem to recall you mentioning that there's now single board computers that can keep up with the demand for serving video. Can you discuss some single board computers that can handle Plex? Thanks, Greg. P.S. I'm just up the road north of Bel Air. Would love to buy you a beer sometime. Maybe Independent Brewing in Bel Air. Where's Bel Air? What's that?
I honestly didn't even see that part of the email, so now I feel really stupid. I don't know if I've seen Independent Brewing. I know two places closed down in the last year and new places opened up in Bel Air. But Bel Air is literally 18 minutes from me, maybe, right up
the
road.
No way.
Oh, yeah, right there.
Dude, if there's free beer, I'll drive the, let's see, is it 16 hours to Maryland from here? Yes, I will drive 16 hours for a free beer.
Well, I mean, it's there. Okay, now, the real reason I honestly saw the beginning of this email and I could have already answered him, but I only have my own perspective on this and I think more perspectives on this is better. I'll start by saying Plex has become uncommonly mature towards lower spec machines in the last year, year and a half. So the real question I would say to Gregory is it matters. It depends. How many computers do you think you will simultaneously be streaming to? And what do you expect the quality of those videos to be? That's the first real determining factor on can you run this on a single board computer? And if you can, which one? But I think me and you would both agree which one we would probably think right now you can buy, get in your hands, and run for a fair price and probably meet most needs.
So I've actually run Plex on at least four single board computers. And my least favorite would be the Raspberry Pi 3. Going up the ladder from that would be the Rockchip 64, because I did that when I was in Jackson, Michigan. I ran, it's got a USB 3 port. So I was running the video off, you know, was stored on the USB 3 drive. Because I still can't get over how cheap USB 3 drives are. If you're a shrewd shopper, you know, follow Sam's Club or Costco or whatever, you can find a deal there. In fact, I still have an 8 terabyte drive behind me in a box that I think I got for $129. Going up from there, I've run it, and actually it's five machines now. Going up would be the Odroid XU4, which is running Time Capsule and Plex with sonar radar transmission. I do that quadruple, so Plex, sonar, radar, transmission on all of these devices. And so the Odroid has been a rock solid staple for me. I am also running that quadruple, not trio, in the Orlando crash pad on an Odroid HC1, which is exactly an Odroid XU4, but with a SATA port on it, you know, a SATA edge card connector that you can put a 2.5-inch laptop drive on. And that's a drive I shucked. In fact, I got a video on that. So if you look up my YouTube channel or you can find my YouTube videos from flyingrich.com and click into them and see that. Above that, oh, I don't have it here. I've been bringing it around with me. So the Rock 64, is something I would consider above it. I've been running some tests with it. Maybe I can't say apples per apples. Like, I ran these videos, I ran four of these videos, and I definitely know it's better. I'm just kind of speculating it's better based on specs, based on the RK3399, those kinds of things, and the support on that board. So I was also running that as a Plex server. So you got five boards I talked about. The Stinker would be the, you know, Raspberry Pi. I've heard of people doing it. I wouldn't. If you're running low quality video, you know, maybe say 1080p or less, and depending on the codecs, if you get them, the codec set up correctly, you may have to re-encode them for the target device, and you may get good results with it. The Rockchip 64, I would get occasional buffering on, and I'm thinking it was just, you know, CPU, GPU constrained. Now, newer versions of Plex may be better and better suited for it, or newer versions of operating systems for that board may leverage the GPU better. But the Odroid XU4 is really where you get into the range where it's virtually no issue. It's a very solid performer. So definitely the Odroid XU4 and HC1, HC2, I would expect not to have any problems. Now, I can't tell you, if you got six kids, you can run six streams simultaneously at 4K. I can't make that claim. So that's going to be the wild card. And I'm going to guess very subjectively that the Rockchip 64, I'm sorry, the Rock... Wait, did I get it right? Whatever the Rock 64 with the RK3399 is. It's the Rockchip Pro. Rock Pro. Thank you. Too many Rocks and Pros and chips. And the Rock Pro, I'm going to very subjectively, without any real hardcore data to back it up, say that would probably be the Cadillac and should perform better than the Odroids. Now, of course, I got the new Odroid coming, so that might be worth it. The out-the-door price on that Odroid N2 with the 4 gigs of RAM, I think I got the case and the power supply, was, I think it was 100 or a smidge over 100. I forgot what it was.
Yeah, it's like 110 for that one.
Yep.
Yeah. So, I'll say the only way to do it on a Raspberry Pi, literally, if you're the only person watching the stream and it is really bad, really low quality, really low bitrate video, the Rock 64 to me is the sweet spot for price performance kind of thing.
The Rock 64, you can actually get the 2 gig version. Like when you compare the Raspberry Pi 3 to the Rock 64, you can get 2 gigs of RAM as opposed to 1 gig and be at the same price level.
Yeah, and for a Plex server, I don't think RAM is an extreme necessity, is what I'll say. So you could get less than the 4 gig RAM, and honestly, in my opinion, see really good performance. Because that's only around $40 to $50. Once you go above $60 to $70, then you get into the Rock Pro 64 type area and the Odroid XU4. Unfortunately, because it's a Samsung Exynos processor, they have to pay licensing fees, so you're going to pay for that name. If I had a choice between those two boards, the Odroid XU4 or Rock Pro 64, I would honestly probably go for the Rock Pro 64. It is a little bit physically bigger. The power supply, I want to say, was like a good $3 more as well. But honestly, I think you would probably get a little bit better performance out of it. The Odroid XU4, I tell you, the best thing about it is the physical size. It is literally Raspberry Pi size. The downfall is it only has two USB 3 ports and then just one USB 2.0 port. And I'll say this really quick tangential story related thing. I've known multiple people, at least five people in the last month, who have literally bought like $200 to $2 million pieces of enterprise hardware. There is no SATA to speak of in any of these devices. Everything is NVMe now. Because of that, SATA prices will plummet incredibly for the next 6 to 8 months. And because of that, then the lower of the lower end, which are the portable external drives, like USB 3 drives will again plummet to where you'll be able to get probably about a 6 to 8 gig external USB 3 drive.
You mean terabyte?
Terabyte drive for maybe $80 to $100 in less than 4 months. Prices will just keep plummeting and plummeting while NVMe is taking over in the enterprise.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have complete arrays that are all NVMe.
Yeah, and I will take you up on that offer, Greg. I can't do it this week, but I will make a note of it. It's almost like I know to a couple guys when they have conference events that are physically close to them, it's not as good for them because then, you know, their family expects them to be home. So what I'm going to say is I'll shoot you back an email. This is the in the week of the 12th. I'm going to say hopefully around the 20th, maybe. Because there are some good places in Bel Air, I will say that. So I'll say that, and thank you for the email, Gregory. I think we have another one from Gregory as well. It is entitled Mini PC Show Contact - Data Center Inner Drawer. Or did you say drawer? Drawer?
Why am I not seeing that one? Oh, okay, I got it here. All right, so Greg Smith. Oh, that's the same guy. Okay, subject, Data Center in a Drawer. Rich mentioned a couple times his data center in a drawer. Around my house, I have several single board computers, Raspberry Pi, A+, B+, a couple of 2B, BeagleBone. I don't have any time to play with them anymore. So any suggestions on what I can do with these SBCs? I have one as my Unify controller, one as my Plex client. I had one that I used as a Pi hull. As well as one I've taken off. Oh yeah, I have one that I'm trying to make into a weather station machine. But I have several that I'd like to put to work. I'm looking for some suggestions as to what to do with the others. I do like the idea of having enterprise network, but tiny in the house. Wow!
Right.
It sounds really like he's off to a good start.
Oh, I agree. Do you know what the Unify controller is?
I'm thinking of something else. No.
I believe Unify is the operating system for the Ubiquiti line of routers and switches. And I believe this is like you can install this on a machine and it becomes like your central workstation for all of your Ubiquiti devices. So you can manage them from one interface. And that
is, I believe you are correct, sir.
And that is pretty damn cool, I'll say. But he definitely sounds like he's already flexing some muscle. But I know there's at least a couple of things we can think of.
Okie dokie. Something I talk about pretty frequently is home automation. So I run Home Assistant. There's also other Raspberry Pi based home assistants, or actually I should just say Raspberry Pi, different hardware platforms also. I'm actually running, because I've had it kicking around. I do have a video on this also, so if you look up my YouTube channel, PiAware, which is by FlightAware. So I actually have that running in Orlando, because I just had it around, figured I'd plug it in and make it work again. The weather station stuff, and unfortunately, there was a super cheap Dallas Semiconductor one-wire weather station. I still have it nearly unused in the box. And you still can get a lot of the, I think Maxim bought Dallas Semiconductor. You still can buy a lot of the components, and you could build your own, or you may be able to, like with some Googling around, find all of the weather stations super cheap. I know I didn't pay more than $40 for this. And it does wind speed, direction, temperature. I don't know if it does humidity. It may not do humidity. But it looks super professional. And really what I'd like to do is put a cupola on my house here and have it set up there.
Yeah, I'll say homeassistant.io is probably the thing you can put on one of those devices and get the most functionality quickest out of it. The interface is, I will say, among the best for home automation. Its flexibility, functionality, how much it supports is also near the very tippity top. It also has a plug-in architecture, which I wasn't completely aware of, where you can add more components to it. But I think that would be probably one of the easiest use cases for it. I will say, unfortunately, for at least a fair amount of home automation, you're then going to need to buy extra hardware, whether it is sensors, switches, or outlets, to really get functionality out of it.
Well, one of the things that I really am enjoying is the Sonoffs. So the Sonoffs you can get for around $5, and you can control switches. They're pretty much designed to, like, you cut a lamp cord and you kind of put that in the middle of the lamp cord, and they work off MQTT. You have to flash them. And it's pretty easy. There's a lot of home automation videos out there. The Hookup is a good one, the YouTube channel, The Hookup. And I did my garage door that way with a Sonoff SV. Open Media Vault is another good thing on a Pi-type device. I know somebody said they run it on a Raspberry Pi, but that's one of those I'd like to run on something better than a Raspberry Pi. It sounds like this guy is kind of IT savvy. There's a data storage system. Oh, gosh. I know I have it bookmarked. I'll have to look it up. Open Media Vault is a good thing that you could run on something with like USB 3 and hook up storage to. Or something like an Odroid HC1 or HC2. That would be a natural for storage on your network.
Yeah, what I'm going to do is I'm going to basically like soft transition to this link in the notes. It's on line 885 in the notes, Rich. Now, this comes with a caveat in this page is not dedicated towards ARM-based things. But the reason I like this page is it gives you at least an idea of possibilities, is what I want to say. It is hosted on Kickball. He's the maintainer of it, and it's basically a list. It's called awesome-self-hosted. And if you scroll down, it's basically a bunch of different categories and a bunch of different links to projects that you can have completely self-hosted in your ecosystem.
Definitely the phone, the SIP PBX and all that bit. I'm running free PBX on a Pi Zero. So that's very cool.
Yeah. And on this list, I'll say basically, I don't want to say the sky's the limit, but I guarantee you, if you go through this list and you find a topic that you like, and then you go and look at software, I nearly want to guarantee you, you install Diet Pi on any of those devices and go through the software configuration wizard, and you'll be able to find alternative software that can do these same kind of things. And it's literally everything from bookmarking and link sharing, automation, contact management, email servers, SIPs, IPBX, like Rich said, XMPP servers, conference management, content management, ebook libraries, feed readers, file sharing, groupware, human resource management, learning in courses, media streaming, money, office suites, password managers, paste bins, photo galleries, all kinds of backup tools kind of thing. I really saw this list and I literally just started going through browsing, opening in new tabs and bookmarking some of the software I thought that looked really cool. I think this would be a great start just for discovery purposes.
Oh, Nextcloud is something, you know, it's so funny. We're getting to the point where we're forgetting these things are existing because we have them running and we just think of them as, you know, the light, the water, the whatever.
Yeah, and that's the thing I will say about my Nextcloud that I appreciate is it just works. There's every now and then I log in. I have it set right now to manual update to where I log in and then on the top I get a little banner telling me there's an update available and I just SSH into the server, do the update, and I'm done. I will say on my Rock 64, the video conferencing experience is not working right. I want to say it's Seed or Speed or Smeed is the actual maintainer of it. Like they're the company behind it. And I'm sure I just got to wait for upgrades for better optimization to get that to work right. Because I've seen it even on a Raspberry Pi Zero run.
That's nuts.
Much better than what I'm seeing on this Rock 64. So that tells me I just got to wait for it to get fixed and updated. But Nextcloud is one of those unbelievably smooth things that if you get installed, you can put clients on phones, on tablets, on laptops, on desktops, and automatically synchronize files around like your own personal Dropbox. But that's really only the beginning with Nextcloud. You can have communications, calendaring, news feeds, syncing, chats, all kinds of different things on that server. It just works so well.
Now, what you used a specific version of Nextcloud, right?
I got mine from ownyourbits.com. And the main reason I went with the ownyourbits.com version was because it came pre-installed with what's called the NCP, which I take as being the network control panel. I don't know what it's called, Nextcloud control panel. And it's basically like an admin panel where I can easily go through a GUI and I can enable things like dynamic DNS, let's encrypt, automatic backup, restoration, rsync over a network, updates, upgrades, automatic upgrades. There's a whole bunch of backend features that you don't get on the regular Nextcloud. And I really did want that on my instance. I am getting updates maybe every week and a half, and they're small point upgrades. So I figure it's only a matter of time before it becomes really primed and nice. And if you go to ownyourbits.com, go to download, they do have versions for multiple devices, specifically geared for multiple devices, including the ROC 64.
Oh, and I got to give love to Diet Pi. We did a show just going through all of the software on Diet Pi. So if you go to, is it dietpi.org or .com?
I believe it's .com.
Yeah, it's .com, and you can look at all of the software that they have to install. Let's see, is it under features? So if you go to features and then Diet Pi software, there is going to be a list of everything you can install. Different desktops, remote connectivity, audio, file sharing. It's always worth a good browse going through there, because you're going to find stuff you're like, really? You can do that? And they add new stuff all the time. So it's definitely worth trolling through on, I would say, a monthly basis.
Gotcha. And I'm going to have a link in the notes. On our list, it's 888, Rich. And I found this, and I found this to be at least interesting. It showed that basically Plex themselves as an organization since February 2018 have officially supported ARM version 7 and ARM version 8 installations, which is why I believe performance for the Plex server that I'm seeing on my ARM devices, it is almost shocking how well it works. So if you want to do a little reading up on how they did everything, what to expect with it, there was a little write-up there on forums.plex.tv.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I didn't even know that was there. I kind of feel bad. I definitely use them. So I have mid to late insomnia, and I'm the guy that can't go to sleep. I can go to sleep, but it's just much more hard. If I am out of my own head, and the best way for me to do that is a TV series that I've seen every episode of, and that's what I use my Plex for. That's the main thing I use my Plex for, is to sleep. Because even if you watch Netflix, it plays, so many shows. And I guess it's depending on how they compensate the producer of the show. So something like Star Trek Enterprise, you probably can play 10 episodes and it won't stop playing. Something like Friends may play 4 episodes and then say, hey, are you watching? And that's what I enjoy about Plex, is I can pick a series that I've seen hundreds of times and just play episodes. It'll play until the morning. So I have constant background noise to keep my mind out of my own head. Otherwise, I won't sleep.
Gotcha. And I looked for this and I didn't find it earlier, so I found it now, Rich. Line 887 in the notes. Odroid N2, the board you bought that you should be getting any day now. I saw this and I honestly wanted to wait until we were on a show to bring it to you, but it's on cnx-software.com, which is a fantastic site for all mini PC-related thing. And it's basically called... It is Odroid N2 GPU drivers, Linux 5.0, impressive benchmark score. If you scroll down towards the very bottom of the article, it says I've never seen such a high score as 1,119 before. Give me a second here. Let me switch the camera on the stream. Yeah, it says I have never seen a score of 1,119 on ARM hardware, but at the same time, I have never ran Wayland version of this benchmark. For a reference, the ROC Pro 64 RK3399 single board computer gets 48 points in the on-screen test default and 201 points on the offset test. So basically, with Wayland running on the Odroid N2 compared to the RK3399, basically the Odroid N2 literally destroys it, blows it out of the box. So on a more modern Linux distribution running Wayland instead of X server kind of thing, wow, you should be quite, quite satisfied, is what I'm going to say.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I'm very excited.
Well, I mean, you know, we did hint at it and we did say it. Odroid and Pine 64 are, to me, leaving companies like Raspberry Pi just completely in the dust with the performance per dollar that you're getting out of these devices. And I honestly think the Odroid N2 is going to set yet another bar that other people are going to struggle to reach.
Oh, and you know, you just reminded me. I was so mad. We did the yearly predictions, and I predicted, like, there will be no Raspberry Pi 4, there won't be any new improvements. And earlier this month, MicMake came out with a video. Did you watch his video?
No, on April 1st, I watched Red Nothing.
And, you know, sometimes, I don't know what happens to my brain on April 1st, but that, wait a second, is this a joke? Isn't the first thing that I come up with. And MicMake did a video of the pre-release of the Raspberry Pi 4. Definitely give it a watch. It's a joke. I thought it was real. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to eat my hat. I predicted no Raspberry Pi 4. Maybe they were just a little late. So anyhow, touche, well done. He definitely got me hook, line, and sinker. So if you want to watch a video and have a laugh, that's a good one. And MicMake is good on all this stuff, so definitely watch his stuff on YouTube.
Absolutely, absolutely. One that I want to talk about, but I kind of can't talk about, but I'm still going to talk about just a little. Line 876. It basically says, "Is the Raspberry Pi ready for industry?" And it's over at automationworld.com, which is really laden in advertisements. But okay, we've talked about this in the past. You know, are we going to see the Raspberry Pi put inside of a case, welded shut, and then shipped out and called something else? I'll just say this. I have personal hands-on experience, not hands-on, but seeing experience. A major company that has business in every state in the union, no doubt, every single state has this company in there. And I walked up to a computer-like device, and I look at the computer-like device, and I look at the side of the computer-like device, and I see a little box hanging off the side of it. And I look at that little box, and I see ports on it, and it's like a credit card-sized box on the side. So I pull out my phone, I put in Raspberry Pi, I look at the port configuration, I put it right next to it, and this is a standalone appliance piece of hardware device used for specific physical real-world analytics, is what I'm going to say, and it has a Raspberry Pi connected to it, and it basically gets all of its updates through that device. We, as a company that leases the device, we don't touch it, we don't have anything to do with it, it just silently works, and the Raspberry Pi updates the actual device, handles it, the rebooting, and handles the scheme. And it also does monitoring on the device. So every time we use the device, the Raspberry Pi connects with the home company and lets them know that we did successfully use their device, aka charge us more money. So the question isn't, is it ready for it? The question is when are more people going to realize that it's already being used in more than likely at least 20 states in the union have this exact product that I know of. So it isn't a question of, is it ready for enterprise industry? The question is how far is it going to go? And is it going to make enough of a dent to where everyone starts to notice it and recognize it in the tech world?
So it sounds like, you know what an iDRAC or ILO is?
Yep.
That almost sounds like a functional description of that, of what you described.
Yeah, it's like a management interface for it. The only difference is the domain admins don't log into it, but the company does.
Mm-hmm. So, and for the people out there, and Dor, help me out if I'm describing this wrong. I am actually not allowed in my data center.
Neither am I. Trust me, they won't let me in anymore.
It isn't a personality thing in my case. But
with me, they just know I won't leave anything alone. ILO stands for Integrated Lights Out. It's a interface to the computer to where you as a technician can remote into the hardware and literally watch the entire reboot process. The server or a computer could literally be locked up at a screen where nothing is working, yet you via the ILO interface can log into the computer, look at the screen, see what's going on, and literally force reboot it right there and watch the entire process. It is literally like you have control of the basic firmware.
It's like you're hands-on.
Yeah. Basically, it allowed server technicians to do all their work remotely except for physically taking a drive out of the computer.
Correct. Yeah, absolutely. So you can power it off, you can power it on, you can like quick reset, you know, quick power button it, you can boot to the firmware, you can upgrade the firmware. All of these things are done remotely, or better yet, scripted.
Yeah.
So that no human actually touches these things.
Yeah, and they typically have their own network interface, so they're on a completely separate LAN. So you can even change IP addresses on the computer itself, and your connection works just fine. So it's becoming a ad hoc ILO interface for devices that didn't have it in the first place kind of thing.
Actually, so another thing that people, I know Dan Fry is on the road a lot as a consultant living in hotel rooms. And what a lot of people will do is they'll have a Raspberry Pi pull in the hotel Wi-Fi, and either they hardwire, you know, Cat5 to the Raspberry Pi, or have it act as a hotspot so they don't have to put in the hotel password all the time. Or some hotels, the password changes every day. So you just do it once, all of your devices connect to the Raspberry Pi. So when you travel, that's another great solution. So you don't have to constantly update things. And maybe you bring an Xbox with you or whatever it may be. Or maybe you just have a number of devices that you don't want to have to set up each time.
Gotcha. Now, we do have one more email, Rich.
Okay.
It's entitled Thoughts About Mini PCs and AI from Pete. It's a little bit of a longer one. That's why I saved that one for last.
Okie dokie. Let me scroll up. So Pete Deutsch, first off, I want to thank you for the podcast and all of the information about mini PCs. I enjoy hearing you talk about what's new in SBCs, their pros and cons, and how to use them. Well, thank you so much. I follow mini PC news partly because I find it very interesting and partly because I volunteer with my high school's robotics team, and robots need mini PCs. Oh, dude, so cool.
So jealous.
Oh, yeah, totally, totally, because that's something I was very interested in and don't do enough of anymore. I dabble with home automation and home security and don't want to send all of my information and subscription fees to Nest, Ring, SmartThings. Yes. I feel like you guys struggle to find uses for AI devices like Intel, oh boy, I can't say that, Movidius, Google Coral, or NVIDIA Jetson Nano Systems. So I thought I'd mention some ways they can be used. Oh, cool. Use object detection to only alert for people and not background cars. Yep, lights, animals. Or to only alert for when the dog wants to go in or out. That's cool. Use facial recognition to trigger certain user actions on smart home. Yep. Use voice recognition to trigger actions without Amazon or Google listening. That's cool. Nature lovers can get alert to take pictures of their favorite animal, bird detected and not other raccoon, robin. And he has a URL, naturebites.org. There are open source car computers and dash cams. Adding AI could help with collision avoidance and depth detection. And so reddit.com/r/crankshaft. I will have to check that out. The Intel RealSense T265 is a $200 stereo depth camera using an internal Movitis for calculations. DIY hobbyist will soon be building similar things. And the URL is intelrealsense.com/tracking-camera-T265. We will have to post the links in the show notes.
Oh, yeah.
Most colleges and over 60% of high schools have robotics teams that need useful mini computers for vision processing, navigation, and he says SLAM. I guess that's an acronym. Depth sensing, etc. I expect Jetson Nano to be heavily used for this. And another URL, firstinspires.org. So firstinspires.org. There's small robotic RC car kits in competitions, donkeycar.com. That's cool, because I'm thinking about a similar project. Hobby farmers can monitor plant health and rodents, farm.bot. That's cool. Drones, quadcopters, and mobile AI navigation, identification, inspection, mapping. Oh boy, this is a longer URL. It's bulletin.com/artificial-intelligence/drones-AI-companies. Small mobile robots need neural networks to drive, and there is getting to be a lot of different models. And wow, that's a long URL, but we'll put it in the notes. fastcompany.com/90291820/8-robots-racing-2-win-the-delivery-wars. Wow.
Yeah. Today, Google Wing, I want to say it's called Google Wing, got launched in Australia. So they're first to the punch. They made a drone delivery system, and it's launched. It's official. It's out in the wild. So they were like the first one to get to it. Yeah, Google Wing is what it's called. And of course, it's a alphabet company. Here's the thing. I wish I could do some of these things, but they all sound like they cost a hell of a lot of money. That Intel Movitis Cam, I think of that as almost like looking like a smaller version of the Xbox Kinect, but because it's Intel, it's basically all open firmware, so you can basically program it to do a lot of things. And it's a very controllable stereoscopic camera, so it could basically do 3D kind of modeling and very good depth perception in it. These are really good links, I'll say that. Nature Bites, I will say, to me, that one's awesome, because with that one, you can literally put cameras outside and say, tell me whenever you see a robin, and other birds could come fly in, and it would know that's not a robin. And then when it does see one, it could give me like a text message to say, come here and look, dummy.
Yeah, the donkeycars.com is cool. They got a lot of neat stuff there.
Yeah, and I also did see a link, I want to say it was Sweden, maybe, where they had automated like RC racing cars, where basically, you know, the old school days, you would have people standing on like a little platform with their little remote controls, and they would race and everyone would be controlling their car independently. Well, these were basically automated cars where you had like a certain amount of time to run it around the track by hand to, like, you know, soft program it. And then you would set it all on the line and just say go. And then the automation would take over and they would race. And it was insane how fast these things were going around. But and that to me is like one of the ways that enterprises are going to learn how to do things, because of hobbyists basically maximizing the efficiency. Because, you know, they can't afford, you know, $200,000 pieces of hardware. And, you know, I think enterprises are going to learn a lot from those kind of people.
Cool. Yeah, I'm kind of trolling through the links right now. So one of the things that I really wanted, because I'm going to be getting up at 5 a.m. and going to Orlando. So it's 150 miles to work tomorrow morning and then driving back, and just some lane keep assistance by like, hey, you're swerving left, or hey, you're swerving right. A little bit of reminder would be nice, even if it didn't turn the wheel.
Yeah, I listened to a show today. It was with a former automotive executive. And he said he was basically kind of upset how some companies are basically holding safety mechanisms ransom, whether it was the automatic brake systems when someone stops in front of you, pedestrian detection and stuff. But right before they started to talk about regulations, all of at least the American car manufacturers said by, I want to say it was 2021, every car sold would have automatic braking on it. So if you weren't, if you're about to rear end somebody, they said they believed it could reduce the number of crashes by about 40%. The question is it good to me? Is it good for the individual or is it good for the greater good? To me, if it's good for the greater good, if it can help save my life from somebody hitting me, then to be honest, I'm all for it, even if it does jack up the price of cars a little bit. I do believe in this country, we have enough people dying from car accidents already. I think we should try to minimize them. And if that means I have to pay $1,000 more for my car or whatever, so be it. I'm perfectly okay with it. It isn't like I buy even a $20,000 car. I believe my newest car was around $14,000, but it technically works.
Yeah, couple of things I've been, I ideally, hey, my drive, if I had the money for a self-driving Tesla, that would be fantastic. If I didn't have to pay full attention, if I didn't have to actively drive the car, that would be a big win in my book. And I don't have a bank account for a Tesla, so that's not happening.
Well, that's one of the things that people don't really get. On a Tesla, while it is called autopilot, it's not autopilot. If you don't touch the wheel, if you don't actively touch the wheel and manipulate it every, I think it is 6 seconds, the car will literally start going like crazy on you. There is no automated driving in a Tesla. Yes, stupid people will try to manipulate it to where they're driving less, paying attention less. Also, if a Tesla notices that your eyes are closed or you're not looking what they think at the road, where I want to say it's 8 seconds, then the car will again start to beep and go crazy. So they're trying to do their part to try to make people watch the road, but given the opportunity, people will be incompetent at the drop of a dime. I'll say that.
Oh, yeah. What is it that you make something idiot-proof, they'll invent a better idiot?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. You cannot legislate stupidity out of any place. It's always going to find ways to creep back in. This was one that caught my eye again, Rich, line 880. I will say, Intel, look, I don't like paying a tax on a computer for a name of any type, but I appreciate when a company does try to contribute back to open source. HP Enterprise is one of the companies. I'm not a fan of them whatsoever, but they actively try to do what's right by open source. Another one is Intel. Intel tries to at least push a good amount of their code back to the open stack. They did just announce, it's not available to purchase yet, it is a Wi-Fi 6, so it's the newest version of Wi-Fi. Finally, they're going back to normal naming standards. It is a AX200 model, and it's an M.2 wireless card. So it fits in the same slot as the NVMe slot, but it's literally like a quarter of the size of an NVMe card, and it's Wi-Fi 6 compatible, and they swear it can deliver up to 10 gigabytes a second in theory. This is why whenever I finally break down and buy a new computer, it has to have a minimum of 3 to 4 NVMe slots on it, because hardware like this is going to eat up all my NVMe slots. That I'm sure about. If I can even get close to 10 gigs a second out of my wireless, I'm not sure I really need a wired connection for a lot else.
Well, considering your most home wired systems are gigabit, they're not 10 gigabit, they're gigabit. So heck yeah, Yeah, I saw this article, and I guess I must have seen it where it was on my work computer, and I didn't bookmark it, but oh yeah, that I saw that. I'm so glad you bookmarked this, because this was one of those things I was pretty excited about. Really, really looking forward to this. Hopefully it's a reality.
Oh, it's you know gonna, that, it is going to be a reality. This is Intel. If they've said it's already going to be launched, then it's going to be launched. If they have no problem in saying this is like an experimental device, look what could happen. They already said this will launch, but here's the real gimmick. Okay. 10 gig M.2 super micro mini size. It says it's going to be available for Windows 10 64, Google Chrome OS, and Linux via the IWL Wi-Fi driver, which I do believe is basically available in any 64-bit Linux system that I know of. But here's the real gimmick. They believe the low-end price for this, $10. The high-end price for this, $17. Take my money.
Dude, yeah. I'm getting chills thinking about it.
Yeah, I mean, literally 17 bucks, and you're getting multiple gig a second from your Wi-Fi. Of course, you have to have a router or access point that is capable of it, but for 17 bucks, I mean, that's a steal. That is literally a steal.
Dude, do you know my... No, that wouldn't work. Oh, right, I just had half a thought. My Asus router, I can have a second input. So I can have my regular internet connection and backup internet connection, but that doesn't get me anywhere.
Gotcha.
That was half a bad idea.
Well, it could have been worse. Another link I wanted to bring just because he is a listener to the show. I think he sent me this on Discord. So I'm looking for his name while I talk slowly. And I don't believe I see his name anywhere. Okay. But it's a really cool guy posted a HPR episode. If you don't know what HPR is, Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. Put it this way, 2,780 shows, if not more,
whoa,
in their library of podcasts. Basically, every day, 5 days a week kind of thing, they publish a show. Anybody can contribute. And by anybody, I mean anybody can contribute anything. He basically goes through his how he built his own self-hosted Nextcloud server using a single board computer and a RAID in Clojure. This is only the first episode. Link will be in the notes. Episode 2780, where he's basically going through all the hardware he's putting together for this solution. Rock Pro 64, 16 gig eMMC module, the USB adapter for flashing eMMC, which is gold. I would happily pay 30 bucks for this thing, even though it's only like $6. Power supply, heat sink, extension cable, and then a really interesting looking 4-bay RAID in closure over at mediasonic.ca. And I just tried to go there and I got a forbidden, so that's not good.
Is there a digit left off?
I don't know. Man. Well, I'll say this. If you go to the site and no, even when I go to their page and I click the direct link to it, it doesn't work either. It's the Mediasonic ProBox 4-bay 3.5-inch drive. So there might be in the middle of like a revision kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I did the same thing you did from their main page link to it. So,
yeah. It's a really sharp-looking enclosure to hold multiple hard drives is what I'm going to say. It looks really sharp.
So he's putting the Pi in that case?
That case is going to basically hold all the hard drives, and my logic is the Pi is either going to go in the back or on the top of it.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, he's going to have what, basically he's going to have redundancy, a full-on microcomputer with 4 gigs of RAM, where he's going to basically be able to host his own Nextcloud. And with a setup like that, he's going to be able to have like 20 people connecting at once, saving multiple terabytes of data without blinking an eye.
That is very cool. Very cool setup. And that's great. That's great when somebody shares like that, that they document it, that they do a show on it, you know, a podcast on it, whatever it may be, or a Hacker Public Radio show, because that's not necessarily a podcast, but it's a great, great documentation of it.
Yeah, and I'll say the best thing about Hacker Public Radio is you never know what you're going to download next. And the worst thing about Hacker Public Radio is you never know what you're going to download next. So it's at your own risk. You never know what you're going to hear. I believe most of, at least what have I, I'm not most of, a fair amount of what I downloaded from them in the past has not been family friendly, so beware. But at the same token, virtually everyone I've heard post on there are very smart guys that really love messing around with stuff, hacking stuff, figuring out how to get a lot of cool stuff to work a little bit differently than expected, is what I'll say. One more I just wanted to bring out really quick, Rich, 876. This to me is so close to being like really desirable for me, is what I'm going to say. It's on Lil Putin. And it is this $10 PCB lets you build a handheld PC with a Raspberry Pi 0W, not counting the display. So you spend five-ish dollars or whatever on a Raspberry Pi Zero. You spend $10 on this PCB. And I believe the screen for this that they use, you can get for, I want to say, around $30 or so. And it basically is a handheld computer with what looks like better keys than my pocket chip on it. My pocket chip, the keys aren't the most friendly keys I've ever used, is what I'll say. Just because this was only 10 bucks, I had to bookmark this. I have to look at it. I want to see how much the screen costs. And of course, they don't count the battery, but you can connect a battery to it. Of course, that's going to add like another 10, 15 bucks to it at least. But the idea of having a true hackable computer in your pocket, I think is really, really cool. And the keys look actually usable for a change.
Oh, heck, that's another one. Take my money. Take it. We talked about this last show. I ordered it. It's I should throw up a link for it, but it's a case, a Raspberry Pi case, and it has a screen. I don't believe it's a touch screen, but it has a display screen, and I got that. I haven't plugged it in and played with it yet. This is the 3.5-inch RPi display quick start, and from LCDWiki.com. So LCDWiki.com is where I got it. And I think we talked about it on a last show, and I'm feeling kind of lame because how hard would it be to plug it in and try it out?
I honestly don't remember talking about it. We might have, but I don't remember. So
maybe it wasn't on a show. Maybe we were just yakking about it.
Well, with us, that's definitely possible.
So it fits all Raspberry Pis and 320 by 480 resolution. So I got it, haven't tried it out yet. I just thought it looked cool, and I figured I'd give it a go.
Very cool, very cool. There's definitely more links and notes. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about, Rich?
You know, one thing I wanted to try out last week, because I've got a bunch of drives, I got a bunch of Pi devices, and I've been talking about concepts of like storage and distributed storage, and there's a project called Ceph, C-E-P-H, and there's actually Ceph for ARM, Ceph for Raspberry Pi, and there's, I thought I'd bookmarked a lot of this stuff because I was ready to give it a try, and something I've been considering. So that's another type of project you could do with a Raspberry Pi if you're interested, is doing a, you know, home Ceph install.
Okay, really quick. Block storage. How do you, because I've had people try to describe to me what makes block storage block storage. How would you describe block storage?
Well, there, people usually talk about block storage and object storage, and
yeah,
you know, I'm kind of going soft on this here.
Well, I always took it as allocatable space. So you have your master data storage set, and then you use block storage, object storage kind of thing to allocate space basically on the fly, almost like LVM, how you don't have to take something offline to resize it. When it's object storage, I believe it's redefinable like on the fly. But I'm not sure, but I've heard people try to tell me how it's the best thing and more things need to use it kind of thing. I can't say I've ever heard of this one before, Rich. This is new to me.
Okie doke, and I added it on 891.
Oh, and this is on GitHub. Ceph on Raspberry Pi. Bang. Is it a Docker container or is it like installable on raw hardware?
You know, I've seen them a couple of different ways. This, I believe, is raw hardware, but I have seen Docker installs with it on different websites.
Yeah, it looks like it's basically raw, and it looks like you can install it on either Debian, Ubuntu, Pi-based images, or Fedora-based Pi images. That's cool. Huh. Very good find, it looks like. Yeah, the storage techniques is the way I'll put it. The storage techniques that we use are, right now, they are archaic. They've been the same basic thing for seemingly 30 years or so. There hasn't been a lot of change in them, it seems like. We do have bigger drives, much more expansive drives, much more nodes, that kind of stuff. But it's basically the same storage, it seems like.
Yeah, and unfortunately for me, I'm like a hoarder as far as storage goes. Like, I fill up things and then don't want to delete them, and so it's always cathartic for me when I nuke and pave.
Well, on the good side, storage is getting cheaper.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Very cool, Rich. Do you have any parting words for the people?
No, I just hope you get the show out ASAP, and I'll be with you as much time as I can this weekend coming up to hopefully get that GoFundMe fully funded for Eric's family.
Very cool. Thank you, Rich. I want to thank everyone for the emails. I'm sorry with any delays in reading the emails. I think at least one of them was definitely delayed. Gregory, I'm going to contact you. We're going to have a beer. There's more. And that's the one thing about Bel Air, Rich. I'll say there's more than a couple places up there that are friendly to just basically walking in, sitting down, having like finger food things. You don't have to sit down, have full dinners and snacks, and just have a couple beers. It's a friendly area. Nothing like Baltimore City. Yeah, where the mayor where the mayor proclaimed yesterday that she's coming back.
Oh,
I'm thinking she actually didn't know, but she's probably meaning she's going back to jail, not to the office. But what do I know?
So I was going to say, if he was going to do something the weekend of May 19th, I have an event in Ohio I'm going to, but I will have things with me that aren't going to be allowed in Maryland.
That's a lot of things. May is maybe the worst month for me because I have 3 birthdays in that month I have to take care of. Yeah, I think it's 3 of them. So it's kids, you know what I mean?
Cool.
All right, Rich, definitely thank you for coming out. Brian is doing more family things. I think it's just that his kids are at that age where if it's the kind of stuff where if he doesn't catch his kids doing, school type related things, band type related things, sports type related things at that age, he's never going to get a chance to do it again. So I can't blame the guy. So he will be back. It's just a question of when.
Okay.
And we will talk to everyone again real soon, when hopefully you'll be in about a week. Take it easy, everybody.
This is Martin from Podnuts Pro. Thank you so much for choosing this podcast to be in your ears right now. Don't forget to support all the other Podnuts shows on the Podnuts Network. And we cannot do this without you. So please, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, email us at podnutspro@podnuts.com.